Now to two additional perspectives on the conflict with Iran. Aaron David Miller is a senior fellow at the Carnegie Endowment for International Peace and a longtime State Department official in both Democratic and Republican administrations. And Holly Dagras is a senior fellow at the Washington Institute for Near East Policy. She spent her teenage years in Tehran and curates The Iranist, that is a weekly newsletter. Our thanks to you both for being here. Aaron David Miller, I'll start with you and your initial reactions to this U.S. intelligence assessment, this early assessment that believes the strikes on Iran's nuclear program sent it back only a few months at best.
You know, as a former member of the intelligence community, I take a clear, accurate, and unbiased and non-politicized intelligence seriously. DIA's estimates have always been pretty conservative. And it's early days yet, as the Brits would say. This is one assessment. And frankly, since I don't believe in Hollywood endings in this region, game changers, inflection points, transformations, I think we have to be very, very, very sober and clear-eyed about the road that lies ahead. A, in terms of what damage we've actually done that would, in the administration's words, president's words, quote, totally obliterate, unquote, Iran's nuclear program. I don't think that's what's occurred. And second, how you convert a tenuous ceasefire into a full cessation of hostilities and then a political agreement, which seems to me the only way to actually, unless we're talking about changing the regime, the only way to guarantee, if there is such a guarantee, that Iran won't have a nuclear weapon.
And Holly Dagras, where does this leave the Iranian regime? Does it emerge stronger just by surviving, having survived these strikes?
Well, that's an important question that we're trying to answer right now because we're not exactly sure what are the dynamics between within the clerical establishment. I think one journalist from Tehran noted, we don't know where the supreme leader is. He's been hiding in a bunker. He, for all we know, he might not be around anymore because of all these rumored conversations about maybe replacing him. So I think that it's key, though, that publicly, at least according to open source intelligence, we haven't seen those key vulnerabilities with domestically. We haven't seen public defections. We haven't seen mass protests. We haven't seen acute food shortages or whatnot that would suggest that this regime's on the verge of collapse per se. But, you know, it doesn't mean that these things can't materialize in the near future. These are really important indicators to watch.
And Holly, is there any reason to think that the regime would reconsider its nuclear ambitions as a result of these punishing military strikes?
The Islamic Republic has spent hundreds of billions of dollars on its nuclear program. It has had its nuclear scientists assassinated over the years, of course, during those two-week wars as well. And so this has been very much a point of pride for the Islamic Republic. They've always chanted that in protest when I was growing up there, nuclear energy is our inherent right. And just to see them actually decide to change that, to actually let go of this program in its entirety, I find it hard to believe because it would be seen as a humiliation and in bending the knee to what it views as two aggressors, Israel and the United States.
And Aaron, what do you see as the path forward for how Israel and the U.S. deal with Iran?
I think it's going to be really fraught. I'm not sure there's a ready-made RX or prescription in the road ahead. Maintaining the ceasefire, I think, is important. But if, in fact, that's going to survive, you're going to need to create conditions. The U.S. is going to have to negotiate both with Iran and with Israel separately. To talk about expectations, what is a violation? Will there be a monitoring mechanism in order to guarantee or to report, in order to preempt or prevent conflict that would flow from such violations? You've got the pattern in Lebanon, the ceasefire agreement that Biden administration concluded last November. You have a monitoring committee. But again, it's hard to believe as the weeks go by that the Israelis won't find it in their interest to prevent and preempt if they find evidence that Iran is doing any number of things, reviving its ballistic missile production facilities, for example, sending precision-guided munitions to Hezbollah, or if the Israelis discover undeclared sites, or we do, in which Iran has moved or has originally placed advanced centrifuges. So I think the road ahead is fraught, and it's going to require a very, very realistic assessment by the administration of what constitutes success.
And we have a couple of minutes left. I want to get both your perspectives on this notion of regime change. Throughout this conflict, Israeli officials have talked openly about wanting to see regime change in Iran. The U.S. has said, now they say it's not on the table. President Trump has said it's not on the table after suggesting it might be. Where does that leave things? Aaron, we'll start with you.
You know, if you look in recent years, there are three models of regime change. Russia, Egypt, and Tunisia, where there were massive protests in the streets, security establishments refused or couldn't control the crowds. And in the case of Egypt, the military edged Mubarak out. That's one. Number two is what happened in Syria in December. You have an organized group, HTS, former affiliate of Al-Qaeda, surge into Damascus in the face of a hollowed-out regime, and the regime collapses. Or the Bush 43 model. You invade the country and depose its evil dictator. I don't see any of these as appropriate, right, or conducive to the Iranian case. But I defer to Holly on this.
Holly, final word.
Well, I want to just note that we've had successive uprisings, including most recently the 2022 uprising known as the Women Life Freedom Uprising. And it was, the whole goal was positive change because the majority of Iranians want to see this regime gone. And just big picture, if this ceasefire holds, this regime will take a revenge on its people. It'll take revenge on the dissidents, on the political prisoners. It will cause, it will lead to mass executions. It will go after anybody that they see as not in line with the regime's rhetoric. And that's very worrisome, especially in this climate of uncertainty. And so I just want to emphasize that.
Holly Dagras, Aaron David Miller, our thanks to you both for sharing your insights this evening. We appreciate it.
Thank you.